Welcome to Smashy Business Show. Good morning, everyone. Hi, Majid. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Perfect, actually. It's the weekend.
It's Friday. Yeah. And let's just get straight into it. Our first topic for today, it's that boycotts are contributing to McDonald's global sales decline. Specifically, there has been a 1.5% drop in sales between July and September, which is the largest decline in global sales in 4 years for McDonald's.
Yeah.
That's quite significant. Yeah. But really, why is this happening? You know, most people are, you know, attributing this to boycotts, but I think it's something else.
If you talk about Middle East and this region, the Muslim majority countries, Malaysia, Indonesia, countries like those, there is a very high chance that it's because of the boycotts. I remember there's Al Shaya that handles Starbucks in this region. They closed down a lot of outlets. They let a lot of people go because there's a very big decline in sales in these regions. And Al Shaya handles Starbucks in this region especially. With McDonald's, the problem is that case that we saw, everyone saw, that the franchise which was bought by someone in Israel, McDonald's, 90% of the McDonald's that you see are second owners. McDonald's doesn't run them. Those people, they gave free meals to the IDF soldiers. They said, we will give it to them. And that started a very big wave. And that was like one of the biggest moves from one of the global brands that we saw about that. The whole October 7 onwards, whatever started, the whole genocide that they're doing in Gaza. So naturally, people had to do it. But the sales now, what we're seeing, this 1.5% drop globally is not because of only boycotts. Boycotts are one of the big reasons, but they're not the primary reasons. It's the buying power of the people. People are not able to afford their meals. That is why they're skipping the brands.
There is inflation.
Yeah. So because of that, everything, every global brand is being affected. McDonald's especially, we're talking about it because they recently published, we saw a Guardian report, a lot of big publications reported on it, that it's the biggest decline in 4 years since COVID as well. So, yeah,
but that number
buying
is quite
power
small.
Is also a problem.
That number is quite small.
1.5%. No, if you talk about a $1 trillion project, 1% is a lot of money. It's in millions. So, yeah, it's a big number for them. And it's not just 1.5%. The sales between July and September is just one quarter. It's like 3 and 4 months. 1.5% in 3 or 4 months, then you go on towards the year. It's like a 5% decline, nearly a 5% decline throughout the year. That's a lot of millions lost.
Yeah.
And they've tried it. They've tried everything nearly now.
They've tried
value meals. They've tried
You know what
everything.
They also did? So after the boycotts, what happened is that McDonald's UAE announced that they were donating 1 million dirhams to Gaza.
Yeah.
I believe that they also, Ashaya Group also released a statement.
I don't remember the Al-Shaya one, but McDonald's, I specifically remember the department with Red Crescent of the UAE. So yeah, they're trying as much to, because people in this region have good buying power. That is what you have to understand.
Yeah.
In US and Europe, because of inflation and because of a lot of economic uncertainty, the buying power is down. But in this region, the buying power is great, to be honest.
Yeah.
Everyone can afford McDonald's. It's not that expensive. A meal hardly costs you 10 or 15 dirhams.
But look with
like,
them.
Sorry, a meal would cost you 20 plus, but a burger will cost you 12, 13 dirhams. It's not that expensive if you look at it.
But with boycotts, the issue, it's always such a complex discussion because we've actually discussed this topic before. And I remember that somebody in the comment section said that you don't understand the impacts of boycotts.
Yeah.
Of course, boycotts, they have a far-reaching societal impact.
Historically, we've seen boycotts work.
They do work. They do work. But it's very complex, especially in the Middle East, because you know the people who have brought the corporation itself to the UAE, they are Middle Eastern.
Yeah.
So when the business itself, it's being boycotted, it's not necessarily just affecting Israel. It's also affecting, you know, Middle Eastern owners associated with the brand. It's affecting its workers.
Yeah, I remember one of the social media heads of MAF, Majid Al-Futtaim, they own the Carrefours in this region. I had a small chat with him on WhatsApp, and there was something that we were talking about, and I just joked like, okay, I know you guys are facing this problem, that a lot of people are boycotting Carrefour because it's a French brand and French policy is pro-Israel. It was pro-Israel at that point. And he said, yeah, I've been explaining franchising to people for the last whole half a year, like 2024, and since October 7, I've been explaining people that we are a franchise. We run under the name of Majid Al Futtaim. We don't take money or like all the profits from them. Carrefour in the UAE and the Middle East is owned by Majid Al Futtaim. So if there is a loss, Majid Al Futtaim will face a loss. And if there is a loss, people working here will lose their jobs. So he's like, I've tried my best to explain to people, but it's impossible because eventually the name is there. So yeah, that conversation was very highlighting that the brands are feeling this impact, that we as a Middle Eastern company, a group, Al Shaya Apparel, any group that you take, they have like 10, 20 brands under them. And they're global brands. They brought them into this region, in this country, in the UAE as well. And they started selling stuff. Mm. But still, it's very difficult to make the final end consumer understand what franchising is. It's not a complicated process. It's simple. You
but
start a company.
There's franchising fees though, right?
Yeah,
there
is franchising fees.
If you bring a franchise over, some you have to pay the actual
The basic idea of franchising, the basicest, like basic idea is you run a business. You run it in UAE. I want to open that same business in Saudi Arabia. You don't want to expand. You don't want to like take the headache of going to Saudi, setting up the whole business. So I am already in Saudi. I am already operating stuff. I know the ins and outs. I just come to you, give you some fee. Like
that's the fee people are concerned about.
Yeah, that was paid in the start. The big amount goes in the start when you take the naming rights, the franchising rights, the property rights, the logo, everything rights. But later, yeah, you only pay like 5 or 10% of whatever it is. So yeah, that fees goes to McDonald's. But McDonald's was very clear. All their commercial heads, marketing heads, their CEOs, COOs, everyone came online and said that this is not McDonald's idea of giving free meals to the IDF soldiers. It was the franchise in Israel. It was their idea. And since then, in April, they bought back their 225 franchises from that company. And now McDonald's owns all the McDonald's in Israel. And they don't have any kind of free policy or free meals for the IDF soldiers.
I believe that's what's always very difficult about having a very high position in the company. It's that you may stand for something, but when you're in upper management, I don't believe there's always a way for you to control lower management.
See, to be
I believe, like, for example, did you see, I remember there was this Delta flight incident.
Yeah.
And in this incident, they basically had flight attendants and they were wearing these Palestinian flag pins. And what essentially happened because of that is, you know,
a
lot of attendants
had
saw
a problem
them
with it.
And they had a problem with it. And one of the flight attendants actually went on Delta Flight's Twitter and, you know, said that they don't condone, even though they don't condone this behavior, even though Delta itself, the brand, the marketing did not allow them to do that. And what because of that, what happened is that the stock prices fell.
Yeah.
They dropped immediately. And in the same week, actually, Delta Flight signed a deal with Riyadh Airline, I believe. Yeah, an airline in Saudi Arabia. And from that, and I'm not sure if the flight attendant was fired, but from that, you can just see how one employee's actions can have an insane effect on the entire company.
And with such a sensitive issue, the Palestinian, the genocide by Israel in Palestine, with such a sensitive issue, one person doing something with the company logo and then a flag of Palestine, it can send out a message. The best thing that I think companies should have is a very robust, a very clear guideline of what to do and what not to do. That's on the company. You should have everything in writing, all the possibilities that you can think of. And this also comes to crisis management. If you have a good marketing PR team, you understand that now it has happened. It always happens with corporations. Someone says something and it becomes a problem. The best idea is go for the best crisis communication team that you have or the people. So it's sometimes I see this in the media and PR industry. I've been associated with it since I moved to UAE and now back to journalism.
Yeah.
But whenever there is a crisis, they always go to a default mode like, oh, no, we did not do this. No, sometimes you see a problem, you understand the magnanimity of it, And either you stay silent to see that maybe it'll go away on its own.
Yeah.
But if you think it can grow into a very big problem, again, share prices will drop. If you're not a listed company, you're a private company, a lot of criticism will come on you. You'll face boycotts. Just do good crisis management. McDonald's wasn't able to do that. Even when I was reading that they bought back all the franchises, I talked to a lot of people in Pakistan, in the Muslim majority countries, all the neighboring countries around Pakistan. I have a lot of friends. Whenever I talk to them, face to face, WhatsApp, whatever, wherever, they're always saying, oh, yes, it's right. McDonald's gave them the free meals. I said, no, you have to understand. It wasn't McDonald's. I'm not defending them. I'm not against the boycott. Whatever, whoever is doing a boycott, they have an idea behind it. I don't support or I don't condone it. It's your idea to each his own.
I do boycott McDonald's, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I haven't eaten it also, to be honest. I haven't eaten it.
You know when you, like, walk past McDonald's and, like, the scent of, like, hot, fresh fries just wafts up your nose? I want to go, but I stop myself. And you know why I stop myself? Simply because I saw those photos of these soldiers with the McDonald's Happy Meals.
No, and my personal opinion matters to me, to be honest.
Yeah.
If we're talking about this topic, I'll be very clear. My personal opinion matters to me in my personal sphere. That's it. My personal opinion shouldn't force someone. I can obviously go for it. I can put it on my socials. I can, within my sphere where I have control, I can do whatever I want.
But I think when you're associated with, sometimes necessary, though.
No, but if you're associated with a company, a organization, even smaller, just for example, Augustus Media, I am associated with them. They have a certain guideline. Every company has a guideline that we will talk about this, we will not talk about this, you can do this, you can do that. I'll give you a very small example. If my company says that I have to be here at 8, can I fight against it? No, I accepted the company rules, I signed on them, and then I joined this company, right? They told me 8 is the last limit, you have to be here at 8. 8:01, it'll be considered like a half day or something.
I think it's much more complicated than that. I think it has to do with, like, management. Like, for example, there's two kinds of management. It's either a company will go for top-down or bottom-up. And basically what top-down management is when one leader is making all the decisions. Bottom-up is when a bunch of voices matter in the decision-making. And I think in this specifically, you can't expect just a set of rules are just given to all the employees, like how you suggest to work. I think it has to do with their, I don't agree with top down.
Let's put it on you. You run a company.
Right.
You've set like 4 or 5 rules. Someone breaks that rule every day. What would you do?
What would I do?
You will make them sit on a table, make them understand that this is a rule you have to follow. You'll give them...
If I was the owner of the company?
Yeah, and you set out 5 rules, any rules.
I would actually get management to do that, because then why do you hire people?
Your management. What guidelines will you give your management? You'll give them like 5 guidelines. Never do this, always do this, or in between some gray area that this is...
But I would want them to add their own touch of leadership to it and do it in a way that...
Obviously, you've hired them, the management, but there needs to be a company guideline. Every company has a guideline. Yeah. I'll give you a macro example of this. You live in the UAE, right? I live in the UAE. There's certain laws in this country. You can't do this, you can't do that. Jaywalking is wrong, 400 dirham fine, breaking a signal is wrong. What if you break the signal and say, no, it's my opinion, I think the road was clear and I want to break the signal. Mm. Likewise, if you're working for a big company and if they have a rule against political statements or anything, you have to follow it. Mm. Either leave the company, join a company which allows that political freedom of your thought, or if you're in the company, you have to follow the rules. Companies, countries, all these laws are in place for something. So likewise, Delta Air Flight example, I'm not saying the guy did wrong, but if the company told him to take the pin down after that incident, there's two options for him. Either leave the company because, I support this stance. It's very hard stance. It's a very good stance. I personally feel it affects me a lot. So I'm leaving the company because you're not allowing me to wear the badge pin. But if he wants to stay in the company, they can't fight the company laws. They are there for a reason. Mm. You can always argue that UAE has a very strict law about traffic rules. Lane change, you don't give the indicator, you're fined, this, that. But all those rules are in place, and that is why we see safety on the roads.
Running a country is
likewise
different than
in a company, if the company is global, you say something from one region where you feel safety of saying this, the person in another country may get affected because they're with that company.
Right.
So you have to think of the larger scale. Individually, I personally am completely for your personal opinions. Use your social media. Use all the channels that you have. They've been provided to you. Access their Facebook, Meta, Instagram, whatever you want to use. That personal opinion shouldn't be related to your company. Just write always. I've seen a lot of tweets.
Don't express every personal opinion that you have. Because I've seen...
I believe there should be freedom of expression.
No, but not listen to
when
that.
You're associated with a brand or any company, just don't make your personal opinion that company's
your
opinion.
Your personal brand will become that brand's opinion. Because you know that I've seen this a lot in certain HR hiring processes. Is that
I have a friend. Of your social media.
I have a friend that they asked her about something that she liked, like it was a random meme. Oh. So these things are there.
Maybe they're measuring his or her emotional quotient because memes, some dark memes.
They
if you like
are.
Them,
they'll no your digital footprint. By the way, it can genuinely impact your
life.
A lot of
jobs when you apply in the UAE. Just a suggestion: whenever you're applying to a big company, they will give you. They will ask for your all socials and they do look at it to see, judge your personality. I actually filled out once an EQ form. Like it took me half an hour to just fill an emotional quotient. They wanted to see how stable I was. Do I get angry, under pressure or that? So they gauged me on that.
I did not expect that.
Yeah,
no,
so
but
that
I think with digital footprint, you all have to be very careful because in the end of the day, it could cost you an amazing job opportunity. But much more than that, what if you express something and in a decade's time, it's not something that you agree with anymore?
Yeah, we've seen a lot of examples.
Social media is like, you know, once you say an opinion, that
it stays there always.
Always. It's going to be there forever. And you can't
Trudeau,
change your mind.
I remember. Trudeau did something. I don't exactly remember the incident, but Canadian head of the country, he did something and we saw it. So yeah, a lot of things happen. Just take care of your digital footprint. If you have opinions, keep it to yourself. Or if you were publishing on social media, just write that it is a personal opinion, not my company or whatever brand I'm associated with, their opinion. Because obviously you want to work for a company, you want to earn a living.
Or if you're an influencer. Exactly. Yeah. Like if you're an influencer or you're going to develop a business in the future, like your branding, I can't believe I'm saying, but your branding starts from a young age.
Yeah.
Anything that you put on the internet will and can be used against you. And now our second topic for today is that this is very exciting. So TikTok is planning to open a HQ center in Riyadh and it's set to be there, I believe, in early 2025.
That's very exciting.
And for me, this is really exciting, Majid, because what they're going to do is that they're going to work to integrate better Arabic databases into the AI models in Saudi Arabia. Now, you know, this is something completely tremendous and big. It's a big achievement for the Middle East because of the fact that, you know, I believe there are some people who think that everyone speaks English, but that's like not always true. Like, for example, you know, my mother, my grandmother, my aunts, they all don't speak English. Even at my time where I worked as a sales associate, I had most of my customers, they did not speak English.
And
They spoke Arabic, and a lot of them, which were Saudi Arabian, they didn't speak English with me. They mostly spoke Arabic, and so I think this is so great for them because they finally get to be a part of the progress that AI is making without having to, you know, without having to let go of their own culture and heritage. Because I feel that sometimes when I think about it, I really do believe that. You know, the English language, it has almost colonized the world. It really has.
It's a universal language. A lot of people
because
would
think
say...
about it. Think about it like this. Like, something I've noticed is that when you speak really good English, people respect you more. I've noticed
it
this.
It was a case, to be honest, in UAE,
it's
that's not the
case.
At least in UAE, I would say that's not the case because I've seen a lot of people on the streets, taxi drivers, anywhere. They don't really speak English, but the level of respect doesn't go up and down because they're there to provide you a service and in a very like multicultural environment like the UAE.
But you have to admit it does play a role.
Universally, I think everywhere else, but this region I've seen it doesn't. It's a very good thing that this region has especially because you have so many cultures that you can't make a universal something for everyone. Everyone comes from a different background with a different language.
So I agree with you.
A lot of people from Philippines, they're perfect in English. Like you look at them, you listen to them, you'll be like, this guy knows better than me. But they prefer their own language. They speak Tagalog as well. You go to Arabic people, you'll find some people who are great at Arabic,
you know,
not very good with English. So people are still working in those environments.
Of course, they're going to work in it. But I do believe it plays a role. Like, for example, there's, I don't know if you know her, but there's this very...
Ajit, what about Egyptian Arabic?
Egyptian Arabic is the most difficult Arabic that I've heard. I understand some of it, so I can take a gist of a sentence. But Egyptian Arabic, it's very difficult. Even I remember I was saying Sabal Khair, Sabal Word, Sabal Noor. These are like the three good mornings. But my producer randomly said something to me one morning and I was like, what is this? He's like, this is also good morning. So yeah, Egyptian is like the most, I think it's very diverse. Arabic even itself.
Yeah,
there's
we
like
have a
so
lot of
many,
dialects.
Yeah.
But back to my point, there's this social media influencer here. Her name is Twinkle.
Oh.
I love her. You would love her. She's Indian. And I love to check comment sections, okay? I need to hear what the people think.
Yes, and cool thing I've realized. I've also started reading comments.
They honestly provide a lot of insight. And I remember when I checked Twinkle's her comment section, there are so many people that are always saying, like, you know, you should try and fix your accent. And it's completely insane because, by the way, like, she speaks amazing English. But I think because of the fact that for them, like, they can tell where she's from depending on her English.
All right.
They do judge her for it, by the way, and she's even like discussed it. So this is why, like, this...
See, I come from the country, like, she's Indian, right? So, yeah, in Pakistan, there is a thing that if you speak very good English, they'll hire you on the job. They'll give you a better job.
Yeah, I think language discrimination is real.
Yeah, you get better opportunities, but it's mostly in the underdeveloped countries where literacy rate is bad. In Pakistan, if I am to guess, to be honest, 5% of the people, even that for me is a very big number, will be able to write, read, and speak proper English. Mm. 5% is a very big number if you talk about an underdeveloped country. Mm. So yeah, that, but in the Middle East, trust me, this is my opinion again, and I think I have a solid foundation for it, that when you go to interviews here, people judge you on the base of your talent. I can give you an example, I won't name, but one of the people who, a lot of people who work in Augustus Media, in our office even, you talk to them, they won't be as fluent, but they're very, very, very,
very
good at their job.
Yeah.
So this region provides that, like, budding place or like a foundation.
Definitely.
Where you can build a career on the basis of your talent and not language.
But
so
you have to
that
admit,
is the thing I love
the
about
language
here.
Will give you an upper role
it
if
will.
You have it.
Obviously
an upper
it
hand.
Will. See, in writing roles, obviously it will. In any role where there is communication, any form of it, written, reading, writing, speaking, obviously it will give you an advantage. A lot of people I see here from Northern Africa, Aziz is here in our office, he speaks French, he speaks Arabic. So you speak Arabic and English, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people do that. They're multilingual. So that is why I guess here the environment is that everyone comes from one basic perfect language. Me, if you tell me, I'll say Urdu is the most comfortable language that I am in. But then I have English. I have another regional language of mine, Hindko. Some of the Arabic I understand, don't speak, don't write, but I
understand Arabic.
Yeah, some of it. So I can get a
That's
gist
amazing.
Of whatever two guys are talking about. Not the Egyptians, they're like very fast and their Arabic is way different. But a lot of people from Syria, from the Emirati Arabic, I understand some of it.
Yeah.
Saudi Arabian Arabic, I understand some of it. So I can get the gist.
That is actually
so
impressive.
It's like four languages. So a lot of people here have three, four, five languages in their skills. Mm. But they're judged on their talent in this region. So that is the good thing. That is the only thing
one of the biggest things I like about this region.
Speaking
of like talent, you know, yesterday I was discussing with a friend how I feel like in the UAE, especially in jobs, people are judged more so by their performance metrics.
Yeah.
I truly believe in
how
that.
How good you are at your job.
How
whatever
you're
hired for, if you're doing that perfectly, nothing matters, to be honest.
Yeah.
Obviously, the corporate bureaucracy, everything will be there, like dressing and this and that. But the majority part of your performance is based on what you're hired to do and if you're doing that properly.
But you know why I was discussing that? Essentially, I feel like because companies are so focused on performance metrics and just getting everything out
yeah.
immediately and as quickly as possible, I feel like sometimes people lack that learning process.
Yeah.
You know, when you like, you get to pause, you get to reflect, like, what does this mean for the world? What does this mean for me? Do you know what I mean? Instead of getting to philosophize something, you have to constantly move on to the next topic. And I feel because yeah. of the fact that things are just, they're really focused on performance, people don't get that learning process.
See, to be honest, I have realized over 13 years of my practical and job life, you work, if you find a job which you love and you can do whatever you want, perfect. But that happens like twice or thrice, like one out of 100 people will get that chance. Not even one out of 100, one out of million people will get a chance where they love the work that they do. Every day they wake up with energy and they love the work that do. It's very rare. To be honest, it's become a very common thing in motivational speeches and videos, TikTok we're talking about. You see, oh, love this, love the good. But it's a very rare case that you do the thing that you love and you'll get successful. Now with influencers, I believe obviously everyone wants to be an influencer and they love speaking to the camera. It's getting a little more traction. But this idea, I believe, always work where you get the most pay. We're getting good pay for your talent and the skills that you have. But if you want to really do something for yourself, get a hobby.
Yeah.
Find time for yourself.
You're right about
every
that.
Day, half an hour, 10 minutes. Do that for yourself. So, trust me, in the world, everyone, a lot of kids, I taught in Pakistan for like 6-7 months, and I had these 10-12 years old, and they were all like, we want to be YouTubers. And the only question I asked them, and after that, they completely changed. I was like, how many YouTubers can you count on your fingers? And they told me like, this guy, this guy, this guy. No one could count more than 10. And I was like, the population of Pakistan is 220 million. And you can only count 10 influencers, hardly 10 influencers on your fingers. How much of a chance do you think you have? And they were like, yeah, you're right. So I was like, yeah, education-wise, look at the people who have done their bachelor's and then see the jobs that they have.
Oh, Majid, I don't agree with that
one. Influencership has become a big industry, obviously.
I think so, too. But
still,
right now,
success rate is very bad.
If you, like, ask me, like, do you know any influencer in Pakistan? I won't lie to you, I don't.
Yeah.
They don't yet have somebody who is, like, insanely global. Like, you know, the same way that, like if I speak to my mom knows who Selena Gomez is.
Let me give you an example. Like, Mo Vlogs. You talk to anyone in the UAE, you think everyone will know Mo Vlogs, right? I give you a guarantee. Let's do a quick survey. We'll do this like in a video format or something. Let's go out on the road and just say, do you know Mo Vlogs? And we'll ask yes or no. Trust me, 5 out of 10 people will say no.
I think it's for the people who are chronically online.
We think and believe all of this because, again, we talked about algorithms yesterday. People who are active on social media, me, you, because we work with social media, so we're quite active. We think everyone knows them. But trust me, influencers still don't have that kind of penetration in the market that the big brands have.
You know,
you go to anyone, you say, you know, you know, Etisalat, 9 out of 10 people, actually 10 out of 10 people will know that. So global brands are still bigger than influencers, to be honest.
Yeah.
The only thing that influencers are good at, people who use social media, they have a very good eyeballs with them.
Yeah. That's but you know, Majid, I am.
Okay, let's.
Speaking of you,
How long have you lived in UAE? Let's do a quick quiz.
How long? My entire life.
Yeah. Name me 10 influencers from the UAE, Emiratis.
Emiratis.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I'm going to say.
You speak Arabic, so you.
I'm going to say Fazal because he's pretty famous.
One of the best persons on the internet.
Huda Beauty, Mona Khatan. I can't believe
they're the same.
Me
to be honest, they're the same brand.
No,
Mona and Huda
people.
Came out of the same brand. So yeah, Huda Beauty.
Oh my God, I'm.
So there is a
I'm
very.
I'm gonna say Richard.
Very. Yeah. Our own, yeah.
So
there is a very less chance of you becoming an influencer. You have a more chance if you study properly, go into a field, go into AI now. Mm-hmm. There's like 1 million fields are open for you now. Go into some. Yeah, go into any field. Take that education and don't rely on the degree and the university only. Obviously, do your own reading and research and your projects. But that will give you a better chance to go out and earn or at least make a living that you can eat food 3 times a day and live in a house.
But
influencers are very rare.
I see what you mean, but you know, with this discussion, like You know, last night I had this really profound like realization. If you're living in the 20th century,
yeah,
you are not allowed to not be on social media. You can't sit there and say that I'm not going to go on social media, I don't like being on it. Because if you actually think about it, social media has become a digital asset. Yeah. You know, the same, like I remember when I was speaking to my parents last night, they were telling me at their time, the kind of smart investment you'd make is if you'd invest in a house or you'd invest in gold. But now that investment currency has yeah. completely changed. If you're smart investing, you're investing in crypto, you're investing in digital assets, you're investing in social media, and you're investing in yourself on social media.
Yeah.
So I think that if you live in this century, you have
to
catch up to its
trends. At least have a personal brand of your own on social media, right?
I agree with you, yeah. but you have to catch up to its trends and yeah. you have to catch up to its assets because the assets have changed. What people deem important now. Of course, listen, gold and houses, they will, you know, they will never lose their value, wow. of course, but they'll never depreciate. But of course, this is what's going on right now, yeah. and you have to be a part of it if you yeah. want to be a part of the change. Yeah. And last,
for the newer generation, obviously, have a digital identity, small brand identity of your own, mm. because when you go to a job, you can present that identity that, oh, I know this. Before it was your CV, now it's your social media identity, to be honest. If yeah. you have 20,000 followers on LinkedIn, you talk to someone, they will think of you as, oh, he knows something, he writes something on LinkedIn, mm-hmm. and that is why people follow him. He hasn't, there is a trend of buying followers as well. But again, if you genuinely do good content, it'll show on your timeline, on your likes, mm-hmm. and on your engagement. So have a personal brand identity of your own, even if you're doing a job. At least have some social media relevancy that when you post something on one of the channels, you can't be relevant on all channels. It's very difficult, nearly impossible. Even the greatest movie logs can't be very big on LinkedIn because LinkedIn is for more professional and business-minded people. So have a personal identity of your own and at least have one social media platform where you think when you post something, you get good interaction.
I think if you're going to choose Instagram and
yeah,
TikTok.
Choose whatever
right now,
you
Instagram
want.
And
trust
TikTok
me, still
are
people are very big on Facebook. Facebook is getting a lot of bad news. Like there, a lot of influencers are just there for the sake of it.
Yeah.
But a lot of people are still big on Facebook. Mm. So even if you're big on Facebook, at least have one social media account or channel where you know you have engagement. So whenever you go to a place, you can tell them, oh, I put something on, I get 100 likes on Facebook. I get 100 shares on Instagram. I get 50 comments on TikTok. Mm. So very good to have personal branding in this digital age. Yeah. Okay.
And finally, for our last topic today, this is a very, very colossal amount. There is going to be an AI hub that's in partnership with PIF and Google Cloud launch. Yeah. And the amount that this is going to generate for the GDP of Saudi Arabia is completely insane. I believe in the next 8 years, they're going to have a $71 billion increase in their GDP.
Yeah. So yeah, PIF, Public Investment Fund, this was also announced at FII8. We forgot to discuss the whole details, but we will give you the details of FII8. We'll do it on Monday. Done. A whole summary of what happened and how it happened. But this was also announced at FII8, Future Investment Initiative Conference in Riyadh. So now they're building an AI center. I remember Microsoft is building two data centers in Abu Dhabi. They recently announced that Microsoft invested $1.5 million in G42, which is like the AI company right now in the UAE. They have like multiple subsidiaries. Core42 is there. MGX is part of G42, which invested in OpenAI. So yeah, a lot of things around AI and data centers are happening. And Saudi Arabia partnering with Google Cloud, great thing for them. And yeah, it will help the economy and their Saudi Vision 2030.
Yeah, so and
let's wrap it up because we've gone over time.
Thank you so much for watching, everyone. Remember, guys, you can find us on all social media channels, on LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter. We also have a WhatsApp channel. We also have a newsletter on Beehive. Make sure to tune in. Honestly, guys, business, it's going to make your life better. It's going to make you understand the world better. So make sure to tune in. Have a lovely weekend, everyone.
Bye-bye.